Hi, and welcome to another episode of The Leadership Enigma. Now, here is a question that I get asked all the time. We obviously, as individuals, have strengths and we have weaknesses, or should I call them development areas? And I get asked a lot, should we double down on the strengths or should we double down on the development areas? So I needed to find someone who can help me with that particular question. And in fact, what happens if we do double down on our strengths? Perhaps we end up doing something very creative, something very innovative, something very different to what it was we thought we would be doing. And my guest is a great example of that, and he'll tell his story. And then why not? Let's unveil all. Because my guest actually got me to fill out a strengths report, which I've done. I have the results here. He has the results, and let's really talk about some of those, because that's the advice I give leaders as well. If you do a report, why not share it with the team? I'm not sure about sharing it on an episode of The Leadership Enigma, but what the hell? Let's give this a go and see where it takes us. What could possibly go wrong? Come back to me after the break while we're talking to the wonderful Mark Edwards, who's the founder of The Strengths Explorer, where he's helping leaders, teams, and organizations understand and build a strengths-based culture. So much is going to happen in this one. Come back to me just after the break. Hi, I'm Adam Pacifico, and welcome to The Leadership Enigma, a world-ranked, award-winning podcast that's insatiably curious as regards what leaders do, how they do it, and importantly, why. We'll delve into the human doing, but even deeper into the human being and the power of human-centered leadership to drive sustainable change. So whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, corporate executive, each week we speak to global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts, and disruptors, as together we will discover that success leaves clues. Mark, it's a huge warm welcome to The Leadership Enigma. How are you?
Thanks so much, Adam. It's great to be here. I'm very good.
How was that intro? Was that okay?
It's fantastic. Maybe stick in my middle name, because there's so many Mark Edwardses. It's one of the most standard names in the whole of the UK.
There's only one of you.
So it's like Mark Julian Edwards, if you're looking for me. Otherwise, there'll be millions of me.
They're always going to be looking for you. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to put the links to you and the business in the show notes as well, so they've got those URLs. But yes, Mark Julian Edwards. So here we go. We're going to talk all about strengths, and that is something that you have really started to focus on. I want to talk, let's go straight to that first question. We've all got strengths, we've all got development areas. Do we double down on one or both? How do we approach it?
So we double down on strengths.
Right.
The mistake that we often make, and leaders often make, is to put equal weighting to the areas where we're not very good, right? And we've all been there. We've all been in those organizations where we've had those conversations with those managers and said, Adam, you're really good at this, but I just need to talk to you about your time management. I just need to talk to you about your Excel writing or your report writing.
Oh, you know me well already.
And we all look to the heavens and we go, God, here we go.
Yeah.
Right. And look, it's important to be able to do enough to do your job in kind of being an all-rounder. But all the research shows, if we really focus in on further developing our strengths, we're going to be three times ROI. You're going to be three times happier. You're going to be three times more successful for yourself or the organization. So overwhelmingly, it's about doubling down on strengths.
Okay. And I thought that was going to be the answer from some of the research that I'd read, but I wanted to ask the expert first. So what is the approach to the development areas? Because we can't ignore them.
No.
And we've always got to be working on ourselves. And I'll give you one example. I don't think I was a great listener many moons ago. And I think that was a byproduct of maybe the training that I had as a trial lawyer, because we were trained to transmit. Mm. So I have worked deliberately quite hard on the ability to just be quiet and listen, deeply listen. So we have to do something about that. So what should we be doing in relation to those development areas? Not ignoring them, but how do we approach them?
Well, I think with you, it sounds like there was a latent talent there. I mean, I can't believe that well, clearly you did have the potential to be a great listener. Look at what you've gone on to create. The whole remit of this is you actually are able to listen. So it was a talent that was there, but because of your professional background and one thing and another, you weren't necessarily that good at it. And right. So you decided to really put effort in.
Yeah.
As opposed to an area, I don't know what we could pick, but an area where you just sucked. You're just not good. You're never going to be good at it. Can you think of an example?
Oh my God, there are so many.
You won't go there.
I don't. Anyone who knows me or works with me is saying, "Yeah, I've got a huge list over here." I think. Look, one is I'm not great with detail. I'm not a detailed person. If you show me a spreadsheet, I start to actually hyperventilate slightly.
Right.
So the devil's in the detail, and I don't do detail.
Exactly. So the answer. There's two answers. First of all, understand where are the latent talents. So for you. Yep. Listening was a latent talent with some more strengths, investment, time, and energy. You become brilliant at it. Like, brilliant. This
I
is
knew
a great
there was
podcast.
A reason why I invited you on the show.
The second thing is that we talk about complementary strengths partnerships.
Okay. Tell me about that.
And this is really, really important because it's not all about me. It's not all about you. The context normally that I'm doing this work is with leaders within organizations, and they've got a bunch of people they work with. So therefore, who in your team is fantastic at analysis, at detail, at focus, at discipline, right? And partner with them.
It's the sum of the parts, isn't it?
It is the sum of the parts. And it sounds so simple, but it's so effective. And now I can look back on different organizations I've worked with, and these teams are so much happier because I don't have to try and be perfect. I don't have to try and be an all-rounder. I can have honest conversations with my team to say, we all know I'm great at that. We're pretty good at this. I'm not so good at that. Who can I work with?
I think as I've got older, I've been happier to accept that, you know, warts and foibles and all. And I've got to, and these people know who they are at Heidrick, are phenomenal at what they do. And I think the reason that we are a good team with some really large projects that we've got is that we've got different skill sets. And it's there's something quite rewarding and comforting in thinking, you've got that. You've got that. And actually, between us, we've got all the bases covered. And there's, I think there's almost something about a weight lifted where you happily say to yourself, I'm really not very good at that. And I know it.
Yeah. And I think if people...
Everyone else knows it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think if you've been involved in small startups, micro organizations, you've got your own sideline projects, you're probably working with 2, 3, 4, 5 people. That kind of happens more naturally. Do you know what I mean? Oh, Adam, do this. You're already good at that. I'll do that. And then what happens is when we work for these more mature organizations where there's
corporate
gazillions of people working there, there is this social conformity. You talk about competency frameworks, etc., hitting all the values to be an all-rounder. But we know that doesn't work.
That's a really great question now, because I'm thinking about competency frameworks and many clients have got them, many clients are working on them. Where at each level or at each role of the organization, they start to break down what it is that's required of you. Is that unrealistic then? Because no one person is going to have all of these qualities. It's going to be a little bit of a mishmash.
Can I just have my liberty to be honest and speak my mind?
Yeah, please do, because we're trying to debunk some things.
I rather think it is unrealistic.
Okay.
And that's a whole industry in and of itself,
right?
Obviously, there's certain bases that you need to cover. To do a job, to fit in an organization, you need to kind of cover the basis. So maybe to that extent they are.
Yes.
But then I think we should be reverse engineering it. And even at that recruitment stage, the questions to be around, what are you great at? What do you love to do the most?
Yeah.
When has been the time where you worked and time just disappeared? Like, what do you really bring to a team that makes you really happy? Because then you've got people...
Those are good questions.
Joining, do you know what I mean? And flourishing. They're going to be able to really add value in a way that's meaningful to them.
Does that happen more in a startup or a scale-up than an established global corporate? Do you think there's just more flexibility at that level?
I think there is. Right. I think there is. But that said, I'm working with one or two huge organizations and we've been able to make that transition. But the CEO who I'm working with or the country president is incredibly emotionally aware. Very self-aware of herself and knows where she wants to take the organization.
Right.
So it's less rare, but it is possible.
So, and it also, I think, sometimes takes a leader right at the top of the house to be that self-aware and to be passionate about leadership and culture. And then perhaps it makes the job that you may have or I may have somewhat easier.
100%. That's around organizational culture. That's talk about strength. That's about anything. And people who say that's not the case... You can just do these things ground up. I don't think that is the right. You need to have the right culture. And who is the main person who sets the culture?
Yes.
Is that number one person at the very top.
So everyone, wherever they are in the organization, they might be the newest intern or graduate recruit coming through, or they might be the CEO and the C-suite. Just how important is it for people to understand with clarity their strengths? Because I'm assuming their strengths may develop and change over time as well. So this is something that's not one and done. I'm assuming this is something that's almost iterative. Help me understand that.
Well, actually, it is something that's fairly set.
Oh, is it?
There may be, yeah. I mean, by the time we're sort of early career in our sort of mid-20s, it's pretty set.
Okay.
Now, it might change a little bit. So, for example, you made that transition from, you know, barrister to doing this. So because of that change, you're going to be exposed to a whole array of new experiences. So you'd assume that some strengths may emerge, or you'll have the greater opportunity to bring those strengths to bear. But by and large, you know, my main strengths are around communication, empathy, ideation, that they've kind of been around since for a long time.
Right.
They're not really going to change. It's more about, can I actually apply them in the context of where I'm working?
Okay. And what are you bad at? What are your development
What do
areas?
I suck at? So like you, how long have you got? My focus is rather poor.
Right.
Right now, not an issue because I'm a people person. I love conversations like this, so I'm lost in the conversation.
Right.
But actually, my ability to focus on my own, like for a day or 2 days, is terrible. I would look for any distraction.
Is there any neurodiversity there?
I'm heavily chronic
ADHD, yeah, so I can understand.
I've been told I'm ADHD, although I've never
Welcome
fully,
to the team,
thank you, been diagnosed and all that. And similarly, like with you, I think it's detail, you know, really, really intricate detail, yes. Pivot tables, Excel, all that type of sort of stuff. I don't enjoy it. I'm not good at.
Well, you're in the right place then.
Yeah. But so then it's like being aware. I mean, so actually just be aware of that, right? Just be aware of it and then think, what am I going to do? How am I going to compensate? Who can I partner with? Who can I delegate to? And that's what I've had to do to mitigate those weaknesses.
You and I both work with you talked about global organizations, very senior leaders who are leading sometimes hundreds of thousands of people. And we always say that you've got to start with leading self, really understanding self before you can really start to look at leading teams and then leading organizations. So what are your thoughts in relation to just how important it is to understand self and work hard on that self-awareness and that ability to understand strengths, understand development areas, and dial up on?
Yeah, really important. I'd start fundamentally with the fact that the best leaders are quite happy.
Tell me more. I've had a couple of people in this very studio talk about happiness and joy. So tell me a little bit about what you mean by that.
Well, they're just okay in themselves. Do you know what I mean? They're not trying to be anybody else.
Comfortable in their own skin?
Comfortable in their own skin.
Okay.
Aware of their weaknesses, prepared to develop themselves, prepared to take some coaching and be coachable.
Yes.
Happy in terms of how they've done and genuinely happy to see others around them grow. That's how I define kind of happiness.
I've seen a lot more vulnerability in senior leaders, Mark, post-pandemic.
Mm.
And I wonder whether those 3 years, which are almost like some kind of odd dream now, put people into a position where they just had no answers. And we're living in a world where no CEO has all of the answers. And I just wonder whether that in some ways took the mask. I heard this phrase as well from the CEOs, it's time to take the mask off. So are you seeing leaders now who are being a little bit more courageous in their own leadership style, being a little bit more courageous in opening up, being vulnerable, sharing what they're not good at, finding people who can fill the gaps?
Yeah, I am.
Give me some examples.
when I decide when or not I'm going to work with a senior leader, I ask them a barrage of questions.
Right.
Like, are you coachable? Are you prepared to be vulnerable? Are you prepared for us to disagree at times? Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And actually, most of them are okay and answer in the affirmative. And so great things can happen. One or two instances, I just haven't sensed that. So I haven't worked with those people.
So there hasn't been a chemistry match, really, has there?
No, there hasn't been a chemistry match. But essentially, you know when you really, really want something, you really desperately want something, and you can't have it? It's hard to be really happy for somebody else who has that. Do you know what I mean?
Okay, tell me a little bit more about this.
Well, there's one or two, like personal examples I've got of friends of mine who desperately like were trying to, and you can judge, Adam, if you need to edit this out or not. But for example, she was really trying for a baby.
Yeah.
And she was failing year after year. And she couldn't bring herself to be happy and celebrate each time she saw a new mum and a new baby. And she's a lovely person. Right. So I think if we really, really, we need to be secure that we're actually getting most of the things we want in order to be happy for other people's success.
Right. And Mark, I wouldn't edit that out for the world. I'll tell you why, because we're not identifying anyone, but actually you're talking about a deeply human experience.
Yeah.
And you know that's my passion here, about really focusing on the human being over the human doing. And I've got some sympathy there, because I can imagine that's such an emotive subject and feeling that, and so much is wrapped up in it that there's probably almost an element of they feel bad that they can't feel good for somebody else because of...
And this is like one of the most positive people I know.
Right.
But it's just that general idea. And I know I've used a very emotional experience.
Yeah.
And I hope it's okay to have shared that. But we have to be, like, as I feel leaders, they have to have their glass filled up first. They have to feel generally, I'm okay with where I am. I'm making progress here.
Yes.
I feel quite psychologically safe. I want to give that away. And it's just been my experience where you're looking to coach leaders who are quite unhappy and unsatisfied and quite bitter in terms of how they've been treated or where they are in the organization. It's just not going to work as much.
That's really interesting. So that is something for anyone and everyone who's watching and listening to reflect on, actually. So now you've helped me understand that happiness and that joy, or that level of contentment within oneself in relation to almost the shadow that you cast, whether you can genuinely be happy and want to lift up others, or whether there's I've not really thought about that before, Mark. This is why I love doing this show.
Well, I just thought, let's be really real about it.
Yeah.
And this is never really talked about on leadership things, shows, podcasts, books, really. That level of self happiness, contentment within. Yeah. And then the willingness, the wanting to see other people thrive, the sheer joy and the buzz of seeing those around you kind of rise.
In many ways, you've just substantiated this conversation that I've had in relation to happiness and joy, and now how important it is in relation to self-awareness of a leader and how they show up with other people. Let me ask you some questions, because I know you've got quite a fascinating story to share as well, that if we double down on our strengths, if we really identify what our strengths are, and we'll talk about mine in a moment, I've got the odd one, but if we double down on our strengths, you can actually end up leveraging them in ways that you may not have considered. So you have a story to tell.
I do have a story to tell.
As a corporate being, Mark, you've gone and done something that perhaps people wouldn't guess.
Yeah. So the story mainly started in Mallorca, the Spanish island of Mallorca.
Right.
And
I feel as if we should have some music playing.
We should,
now.
Yeah. It is. If you've never been, it's well worth visiting.
Yes, it's beautiful.
And I was there working for a company, doing a three-way integration, blah, blah. And then that contract finished. And it was just that moment where I'm like, now what? I could just go back straight to the UK and carry on.
Yes.
But something deep inside me was like, I want to do something different. Like you, I'd done loads of self-development down the years.
Yes.
I'd done a different exercise to Gallup, which was around the reflected best self exercise.
Right. A lot of people will know that one.
Yeah. And it's basically one where you reach out to people who you trust and respect, and you ask them to share stories of times when you've been at your best. Then you look through these stories and you feel great, and you look for those signature strengths, right? And their mind were around connection, creativity, and humor and play.
Right.
And I basically thought, I'm not really using many of these strengths.
You were being the corporate kind.
I'm just not being myself and using these strengths. God damn it. And I thought, I want to have some fun, and I want to see if I can lean into these strengths doing some completely different things. I went off and I with a complementary strengths partner, my friend Steffi, and created a photo portrait book called Faces of Mallorca.
Right.
And this was a book to telling the authentic story of Mallorca through the locals' eyes. Because as anybody who may have been or heard of Mallorca, it has a bit of a reputation for sun, sea, and sand, and Brits, Germans, and Scandinavians. And I was burdened with the question, where are the Mallorcans? What is it to be Mallorcan?
Right.
So essentially, I did half the So we interviewed 59 locals and we photographed them. So I did half the writing.
Yes.
And I did all the photography.
Were you a photographer already at this point?
Or? Well, yeah, just playing around. I'm not trained
photographer.
This is that
playful, creative side.
So this is it, right? And this is the really, the fundamental. I was consciously going into this to say, look, former bosses, family members, loved ones have told me through these stories, I can connect with almost anybody, right? I'm creative. I'm always coming up with ideas.
Yeah.
And I've got a bit of playfulness about me, so I can crack a joke and lighten the mood. Can I really, how can I use these strengths towards this project? Now, my technical skills around photography aren't great. I still haven't mastered shutter speed and aperture and ISO, and I play around. But it wasn't really about that. It was, can I put that person at ease? Can I read that body language? Can I think of a creative way in which we could capture them on the sea or in this old typical Mallorcan boat? All of that. And I really tried to lean into those strengths as I was doing that project.
Right.
And it was the first, and there's a few other examples, but it was the first time I thought, I'm not my job. You know, I'm a collection of strengths. And if you put them together, there's a bunch of stuff I can do. So that then led me to do, you know, write for the Lonely Planet. It led me to be an international exhibitor at an eminent photographic festival. It led me to do travel show presenting, which is crazy and ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense.
Right.
You know, you've got this corporate career doing HR leadership. What the hell are you doing? Writing a book and presenting a TV travel show. But it does make sense. If you think about it through the strengths lens, I've got these certain strengths. Can I apply those strengths to different areas and actually achieve results?
See, I love this story. So let me just get this right. You'd never written a book before, had you?
No.
You're not a photographer.
No.
And you'd never had anything published before.
No.
And you'd never embarked on a project like this before.
No.
Was there a moment where you had this epiphany? Now, I appreciate you're in a beautiful place in Mallorca. But was there something specific or a collision of circumstances where you thought, I've got to do this? Because there's a courageous decision in there.
I think it comes back to what you were saying earlier about you probably knew you had this latent ability with listening, but it hadn't really been developed.
Yes.
I knew I'd always grown up and my mum and dad got the Sunday Times newspaper and always sprawled it out. And dad always read the financial serious bits. And mum always read the culture and the people bits. And I went towards my mum's side of things.
Right, okay.
And the last page of the Sunday Times magazine, I think they still have it, is A Day in the Life, where it had one page. It described normally quite a famous person, their typical day from waking up to going to sleep, and a bit of philosophy and a beautiful picture that encapsulated them. And that had always stuck with me.
There were some clues then, aren't there?
Yeah, there were some clues. And I thought, I'd love to do something like that. So this project was actually just that on a bigger scale.
Right.
The second bit is I had help. So it was between me and Steffi, my co-writer, who had the idea.
Right.
I wouldn't have done it without her, and she wouldn't have done it without me.
Well, here's the sum of the parts.
It's the sum of the parts. And you know what? And this brings me on to the next part. It's about how other people see you. Do other people see your strengths and enable you to live into them? And Steffi was kind of drumming into me, because I was taking photographs all the time. You're great with people, Mark. You know, I've seen your photographs. It leaves me speechless. Like, you should do something, or we should do something.
Right.
Like, because it's so good. So, look, we're going to talk shortly about Gallup and your report, etc. And in the West, we talk a lot about self-agency. I can achieve anything. I can do it. But in part, I disagree a little bit.
Okay.
And this was a lot about what my TEDx was about, whereby if you're a kind of respected person and you say, you know what, Adam, I see you're capable of? I see this and I see this. You can really achieve that. I still think, much like we raise children, we still need that as adults. We still sometimes need somebody else to see in us something that we can't see ourselves. And that was an example of somebody seeing somebody and empowering me, helping me to go there and do that.
Now let's link this to leaders and leadership. And I'm not just talking about, excuse my voice, I'm not just talking about senior leaders either. This is actually a quality within anybody. So just how powerful is this then of an individual's ability to see the strengths of others and in some ways help lift them into that that personal power space? Or
It's absolutely huge, and it was the subject of my TEDx. So,
what was the title of the TEDx?
Seeing Strengths in Others. I mean, I forget the whole title because I've written five versions of it, but maybe you can put a link in at the bottom.
I will.
But what I decided to do was to take that exercise that I described, the reflected best self exercise. I worked with 18 women across five countries, all leaders.
Yeah.
So they've got the stories, they've got the signature strengths, and my hypothesis was, can photography, now that we've done all this work together, can photography help to anchor in those women's strengths? And, okay. and it did in quite profound ways.
Help me understand what you mean by that. Could photography help?
So it probably helps if I tell a story.
Tell a story. I love
a
story.
So
you're in the right place for
exactly.
a story.
So I came across this lady, Vera. And 2 years prior, her husband had died. Very sadly. And she just started to date again and had a partner called Bernard. And then I worked with her during this process. So we went out, we got the stories, and some of the qualities that came back through the stories was this idea of effervescence, like life, you know, yeah. nurturing, the love and nurturing. They were the two main ones.
Right. Her strengths.
Yeah. So I was over in The Hague. At that time doing some work, and I said, where do you feel alive? And she was from the area, and she said the beach, because the beach is where I went with my dad to play in the sand, build sandcastles, and I just felt so protected. So we went to the beach, and her partner Bernard happened to be there. For the first time, I asked one of their partners to join in a photograph.
Right.
And I said, just look into each other's eyes. And they looked into each other's eyes. I started to take pictures, but it felt awkward, but then I disappeared. And she was saying, I love you. He was saying, I love you. What's mine is yours. And it was just the most emotional moment there on the beach. And there was just a moment where she's looking into his eyes. And I photographed that. And that reinforced massively for her this power that she has
right.
around nurturing. And she's applied it massively since to her work, to her relationships. And then a few minutes later, she just started running around the beach, like, and she was wearing like this like pink top with a kind of floral pattern. She was smiling. She was looking really radiant. You could see the spray of the sea going through the air, a little bit of the sand coming up under her footsteps. And again, I photographed that moment.
Right.
That was about the effervescence and who she really, really is. So, you know, we're going to go through your report kind of thing, and it has a place. But imagine having a really strong anchor like that. And so what I'm doing to answer the original question is I'm projecting the positive way in which all her friends and family saw her. I'm projecting how I see her. And the camera, in some kind of weird mystical way, is projecting how it sees her. So there's a power in really leaning into how you're seen by others at your best.
I love that story. And is there a power as well? I'm assuming those she's got those photos.
Yeah.
In some ways, are those an immediate reminder to step into her strengths, to be that person who is truly who she is?
Yeah, she produced this little photo book. She produced this little tiny thing, this little tiny, tiny, incy-wincy little thing that
right.
fits into her handbag, and she carries it everywhere. It's a constant
right.
reminder.
Wow.
Other of the ladies have got like something, the images on the phone. Some have got massively blown up in their living room, but it's a great visual reminder. And I guess my message here is not everybody obviously needs to go out and take a photograph, but
yeah.
where you're in a lead, in an influential position,
right?
You've got other people around you and you want to empower them. You want to lift their confidence. It's worthwhile telling them the strengths that you see in them. And it's worthwhile thinking about innovative ways in which you can really reinforce that for them. So that it begins to be believed.
So this is, I'm hearing so many things, and I'm going to link this to human-centered leadership, this curiosity of other people, what's the vigilance to see and hear the clues which allow you to identify the strengths in others. And then having, excuse me, and then having the ability to communicate and say to people, let me help you understand what your strengths are and lift them up even higher.
Yeah.
Very powerful in that, isn't it?
It is. And the listening thing is really great because often, you know, Monday morning, how was your weekend? Right? But it's like, well, that's interesting. That's been like, you know, 2 weeks out of four, you've actually said you've gone to the theatre and you've described visually what was really great about it. I hear a bit of storytelling there. You know, so it's listening at a deeper level to what do people enjoy doing? Where do they lose track of time?
Yeah.
Where are they really happy? Where are they engaged? Where are they in a state of flow?
Do you think there's times in people's lives when something seismic may happen where people have that kind of epiphany or they suddenly have a reality check
of
who they really are and what they really want to be doing?
Yeah, it can be. But I think what's already interesting, especially if you listen to a lot of podcasts like we, well, you're doing it all the time, but you listen to it. A lot of the famous people that we know, they really only stepped into their greatness once somebody else had pointed out they're really good at that thing.
Right.
I remember listening to some podcasts, maybe, I don't know whose it was, but I think Woody Harrelson. Woody?
Yeah.
What's his real name? He plays Woody in Cheers.
Oh, I can't remember his name.
Famous.
I know. Are we showing our age?
Yeah. Yeah, he really only stepped into being an actor because that many people said, you're fantastic at it. You should really, really go for it. And he was like, really? Yeah. So often the people who've really made it had somebody behind them who saw something in them who were inviting them to step into their particular strengths, their particular area of greatness.
Well, let's try and work out what I should be doing, Mark, shall we? And do as I say to leaders is when you get a report. Firstly, there are lots of reports around. I know we've got a lot of IP at work and there are a lot of other assessments out there. They're used to great worth. But how should people really view assessments and psychometrics on themselves?
Well, I think do a bit of research. Make sure it's kind of like, you know, well-validated and makes sense and has a good reputation. And to be honest, it's the quality of the, and always I would say have somebody help you debrief it.
Yes.
I mean, read it for yourself, but then have somebody else, a coach or whatever, help you debrief it.
I think that's essential, isn't it?
And look, you can have some okay coaches who really take you through it in a prescribed way.
Yeah.
But my whole approach is not to put people in boxes. So I feel almost a bit torn that we're about to go through a report.
Let's go put me in a box, Mark. Come on.
No, but you know, we would bring it to life with who you really are. We'd step outside of this and we say, okay, you've got some words here like a ranger, a maximizer, but let's get real and talk about where you bring these things to life and is this correct? And
okay.
Do you know what I mean? So you'd have somebody, I think, interested in you at a fundamental level who doesn't have to necessarily stick through the process. That said, let's go through a process.
Well, let's go. And let me, as I say, let me do as I actually advise leaders is, right, five strengths. So I did this particular, I did the Gallup Strengths Finder.
So this is the Clifton
Finder.
Strengths Finder report. Yes.
Thank you. So Clifton Strengths Finder report, thank you. And the top five strengths that came out for me are arranger, maximizer, communication, adaptability, developer. Now, we're not going to bore everyone by going through all of this, Richard, to what I may or may not be doing. But let's pick the top one's arranger.
Yeah.
What's that all about?
Did you read it?
I had a quick scan of it, but then I thought I was going to benefit from your wisdom.
Yeah. What do you think of it?
I think it was pretty accurate in relation to who I am. And I actually handed this across, a big shout out to Naomi at work, where I said, Naomi, just have a look at this. And she does a lot in assessments. And she was smiling and thinking to herself. And she said out loud, she went, oh, yes. So that's normally a good sign where someone is looking at and then thinking, yes, I see this is you, or I see how this is relevant.
So a ranger is like a conductor of an orchestra.
Okay.
They make stuff happen. They can see, they realize that a project is only the sum of its parts, right?
Well, that's a phrase we've used as well.
Exactly.
Today.
And so these people, like you, like to undertake big projects, like to have many component parts, and like to, in a people-centered way, make sure those independent parts are talking to each other so that stuff happens fundamentally. You're the sort of person who would be very bored if there weren't big projects, if everything was very predictable. There's an element of, and I can see that with the combinations of other strengths, of chaos that you quite enjoy. You know, you enjoy being that stable.
Hopefully not the creator of chaos.
Creator. You enjoy being that stable sort of leader who can oversee and make sure stuff happens and people work together who should work together effectively.
Okay. And then that might link as well to number two is maximizer. So what do we mean by maximizer then?
So maximizer is, and it actually, when I read it, I felt more appreciative of being a guest on your podcast.
Oh, well, I'm intrigued at that. Let's go straight to that. Why? Because what is it, again, it's as you read that in a holistic way.
Yeah.
What did you think? What did
well,
you
because,
feel?
Because, you know, the word associated with maximizer is excellence.
Okay.
You know, you really strive for excellence. It might be in your own way. It might not be so predictable. But you think, like, long and hard about who you can have on this podcast.
I do.
You know, so therefore, it made me, once I saw that, even more grateful and appreciative to be here. So thank you. You know, this is about taking good things, good concepts, and really making them great. You know, you're not someone who's satisfied with okay, mediocre, it'll do, yeah, should be able to get by if we do that. You really are quite keen that the client has a really great experience, the listener has a really great experience, that you deliver something that has real practical, excellent value. So it's that search for excellence.
Okay. Now, I've
got... And by the way, we would normally have a bit of a chat here. I'm kind of going through them. This is not how you'd coach somebody.
No, I appreciate you'd be asking me lots and lots of questions, which I wouldn't have the answer to. But let me just ask you another thing, because obviously when I look at communication, that's always been a big theme in my life. It was a big theme in my life as a lawyer. It was a big theme in my life within law enforcement. I think my mouth would get me in and out of trouble. So when you see that, and maybe when you see that combined with the top five, any thoughts?
Yeah, so you're somebody who knows a lot of stuff. You know a lot of stuff. You know a lot of legal stuff. You know a lot of technical training stuff. But when I hear you, like on being when you're interviewing people, when I hear you in this conversation,
yes,
there's no fluff in what you say. You're consciously trying to make things as simple and as practical to understand. And people who are really strong in this, we share it in this strength of communication, have the ability to take quite sometimes complex data, complex information, and just make it very simple and digestible and straightforward for anybody to really listen and understand, and you bring it to life in quite a compelling way.
I'm going to go through this because I think it's good for any person. It's not just about leadership. Any person to regularly get some form of feedback so we're as self-aware as possible. What should I be doing with my life, Mark? Arranger, maximizer, communicator, adaptability, developer. What do I want to be when I grow up?
Well, I can't answer that because I'm just me. Yeah. but, you know, I think the question is, are you doing stuff now that plays upon those strengths? I'd argue that you probably are.
Yeah, I think I am.
Do you know what I mean?
I think I'm in a bit of a sweet spot in relation to what I do.
Yeah.
I'm very grateful for it.
Because before we went on air, you said, well, these are the points I want to hit, but let's see how it flows. Let's see how it goes.
Yes.
That's classic adaptability language, which is your fourth strength. You know, you're not too, you don't want things to be overly structured. You want to be quite natural. You kind of like a little bit of let's see how we go and move things along.
We should say, we do know each other.
We do.
So we're not strangers to each other, but we did rock up today and say, hey, Mark, how are you? So what are we doing today?
Yes.
And that might frighten a lot of people. And so that's when I need to be self-aware, because I could actually get a guest in who freezes at that point and thinks, there's no way I can operate in that environment.
Yeah.
And then others who will come in like yourself who will say, let's have a great, curious, freewheeling conversation and we'll talk about stuff that we know and love.
Yeah. So this brings us on to, to answer that question, I think you are using your strengths, right? You're thinking, I want maximizing, want people to have the very best of value, want excellent in terms of takeaways, even how you edit these show reels and everything is
that's
really,
Jesse.
Well, Jesse, really great, strength partnership, you know, you're really using your partners to great effect. Development, you are developing people, you want people to be better, you're thinking about how can I develop myself, you're thinking about what can the listeners take in terms of really useful that will develop people.
I want this podcast to actually have an impact, Mark.
Right.
Really, genuinely. Yeah. And that's what, I also get frustrated by that it's not having the impact to the level that I want it to.
What would you,
billions of people in the world.
Yeah.
I want what we're doing to be as valuable as possible to as many people as possible.
Mm.
That's what I'm striving to do with this. And it doesn't take a lot to put a smile on my face. I might get one email from someone who says, hey, I just listened to the podcast with Mark and I loved X and I'm using Y. Or I've got to tell a funny story. I was at Heathrow.
Yeah.
I haven't told this story.
Yeah.
My wife just laughs at me when I tell. And I was at this store and someone came up to me and said, are you Adam Pacifico?
Wow.
I said, yes. And he said, I listened to your podcast. And we had a very quick chat. And he said, oh, I sent you a book and I have that book. And it's someone I must connect with again. And then he walked off. Mm. I had a massive smile on my face.
Mark, yes.
That one person in the middle of T5 came up to me and said, you had a Pacifico. Now that's a bit moronic really, isn't it? But there's an element there of, okay, it's always nice to be appreciated, but there's an element there of, oh, so there are people who are watching and listening and it's made them think, or it's made them happy, or it's given them something. That's pretty cool.
Very cool. And the question I'd probably ask you,
yeah,
is if your goal is to have way more impact, and we maybe define that, but if it is to have way more impact,
yes,
in terms of reach, then in being aware of your strengths, understanding the combination of your strengths, how could you leverage them even more to serve you, to have that impact?
Great question. I think you've got me thinking. There's a number of things that you've said where I've thought, I haven't thought about it like that, or haven't seen it in that way. And that's why I love doing this, because I've been asked before, you know, what keeps you going with the podcast? And one of the very first reasons for doing it is I learn every single time I come into the studio and I meet someone, I learn. And I increase my network and I just meet another human being who's passionate and excited about what it is that they do. And it's super cool, which is why you probably won't even realize how much time has passed already.
No.
During this conversation. You'll have almost no, it's like a Vegas casino.
Yes.
That there's no clock in it. And there are windows, but time has almost become immature. And lots of people have said, are we done?
Yeah.
And we've been going for 40, 50, sometimes an hour. So something's going on, Mark, where two people can just sit down and have a conversation, sit in each other's presence, and time has become not immaterial, but in some ways it's become a little bit of an obsolete concept.
Mm.
Have I gone all deep and weird suddenly? I don't know.
You're getting me to reflect. You already were a bit weird, but no, it's fine.
I did say we knew each other.
I just want to come back to something you just did mention,
yes,
about being conscious about who you actually are dealing with, because I think you and I are a bit similar in that way. But, you know, leadership, it's too often there's general concepts of leadership that are taught.
Yeah.
But actually what's quite rare is how do you lead that sort of a person or that sort of a person or that sort of a person? Because, you know, your natural charismatic, communicative really might not work with somebody who is a little bit shyer, who's more introverted, who's more very detail oriented, etc. So how do we flex according to other people's strengths?
Yeah.
What makes other people come alive? How do we do that? And so it is being very self-aware in terms of what our strengths are, but it is being really, really aware in terms of what floats other people's boats.
How do we adapt to their personal style?
Yes.
And their need. Let me finish off by asking you some questions. Obviously, you are the founder of the Strengths Explorer. What are your top tips for any leader of any size business as regards the importance and how to create a strengths-based culture? So let's start with what is a strengths-based culture in simple terms.
A strengths-based culture is a culture whereby everybody in that organization are aware,
yep,
not only of their own strengths, quite a deep level, I'd suggest, rather beyond a questionnaire, but also how to apply them in the context of the work. And also how best to work effectively with other people in the organization in relation to those complementary strengths partnerships I was discussing earlier.
Regardless of how big the organization, because I know you're working with some huge,
yeah,
you know, iconic,
yeah,
global organizations. So regardless of size.
Yeah, regardless of size.
Does it make it a little bit more complex if we're talking about a 50-person business or a 150,000-person business?
Well, I tend to do it team by team.
Right.
So no, because you've always, a team is a team. A team is only really between 10 and 20 people max.
Okay.
So that makes it much
to deal with it in clusters.
Simpler. But there's some I guess, elements that help you get there in terms of strengths-based culture. You need to have good habits.
Right.
So when I go in and do this work with different organizations, I'm also trying to inculcate, introduce very simple habits. So for example, recognition.
Yeah.
You know, if I regularly appreciate you and show you recognition for when your strengths are at show, number one, those strengths are going to grow and expand.
Right.
Number two, you're going to have a higher degree of psychological safety, especially if I'm your boss. And number three, you're going to be able to be more psychologically safe and vulnerable with me. You're going to be able to share some of your weaknesses, areas where you're not so great.
Okay.
So, yes.
How do people get hold of you so that you can help them with their strengths-based culture? What's the best way?
Well, they can find me on LinkedIn, but they must remember to include my middle name.
I was about to say, which is?
Well, so it's Mark Julian Edwards.
You'll find, and I'll put that link in there.
But they can also go to my website, www.thestrengthsexplorer.com. It very handily has the word sex in the middle of it.
I've just looked down on my piece of paper. What are you talking about? Yes, it does, doesn't it? Yes,
it does. I only really realised that with my huge attention to detail after I'd registered the domain. Then I thought, oh, sod it. It's a bit catchy.
Right. Because it's all written together.
It is. It's nothing to do with sex, obviously.
There's a lesson for someone somewhere in relation to developing domain names or picking domain names. Listen, Mark, have you had fun?
I've had a lot of fun. It's been great. It's been really lovely to,
has this played to your strengths?
It has played to my strengths. We're both high on communication.
Yep.
So, and we're both quite adaptable. So it hasn't been too rigid, has it? It's probably been chaotic, but in a good way.
I think so, in a good way as well. Listen, thanks very much for coming to the studio. I appreciate it. It is good to see you. I can't believe you didn't bring the book in. Just want to say out loud.
I know. I didn't think of bringing the book in. That was crazy. We can imagine that we've got a beautiful picture of Faces of Mallorca that we're sharing everybody. Now we don't have.
Anyway, well, thanks for that. We'll try and get a picture of that from the internet and maybe embed it into the YouTube video.
Lovely.
Well, thanks for being a star. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Adam.
Thanks
so much.
Join us again next week for more Curiosity and Insight with the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with me on LinkedIn or visit us at www.leadersenigma.com. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe on all your major podcast platforms and on our dedicated YouTube channel. Thanks again for joining the community.